Hello, and welcome to the BNP Paribas Asset Management Talking Heads podcast. Every week, Talking Heads will bring you in-depth insights and analysis through the lens of sustainability on the topics that really matter to investors. In this episode, we'll be discussing investing in water. I'm Daniel Morris, Chief Market Strategist, and I'm joined today by Justin Winter, Senior Portfolio Manager at Impax Asset Management. Welcome, Justin, and thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Daniel. It's a pleasure.
Justin, when I think about investing in water, I think we can put that in the context of sustainability-related investing more broadly. I think one of the bits of good news over the last few years was how much interest there was in this investment asset class. We really have seen pretty good inflows over the years, even when other, particularly risk assets, were a lot more challenged. It seems that the performance of the asset class, or particularly water-related investing, has been pretty resilient. And I think certainly when we think about the underlying outlook for the businesses that I mentioned you're going to talk about, that outlook still remains quite good. You know, the enthusiasm that we have around this asset class and certainly the needs for this space to develop. Now, we actually did have a conversation a few months ago, and during your last visit here with us at Talking Heads, you talked about reshoring, and in particular, semiconductor manufacturing and the relevance for water. Can you share some more thoughts with us on the topic and how things have evolved?
Sure. So like many things in water, these are really long-term themes that play out over a long period of time. And I think that reshoring is really something that is going to continue, or sort of the rebuilding of the manufacturing base, if you like, in places like North America, but also sort of supply chain risk management, say, in Europe and Japan and other places. And semiconductor manufacturing is definitely a key part of that. Now, for historical reasons, a lot of the semiconductor manufacturing facilities, in the US at least, are in places that see a lot of water scarcity. So think about the southwest of the US. So, you know, what was it built there, say, starting in the 1940s? Stable geology, so you don't have earthquakes like you have over in California. It's close to Silicon Valley. And also there were, of course, tax breaks to set them up. So that's meant that sort of decades later, we're seeing more challenges around water scarcity, particularly in that part of the US. And that's a key driver for water reuse. So if you look at TSMC, the giant Taiwanese semi-manufacturing company, so in Taiwan, which is, you know, a lot of manufacturing, not a lot of water, they have water reuse rates there of like 85 to 90%, so very high. And so you have proven technology, and that's something that now is being employed in places like, you know, Arizona and New Mexico and other places, because making semiconductor chips is a relatively water-intensive process. There are also challenges in doing that, in that you create ultra-pure water to go into the manufacturing process, but then as it goes through that manufacturing process, you have all these other contaminants that end up in the water. So TSMC, when they're looking to reuse, they classify that effluent into about 35 different grades. Then each of those different streams need to be treated in different ways to be reused. So it's quite a complex process. You need specialist knowledge and products to deal with that. So the fund owns holdings in businesses that can help sort of solve that challenge for the manufacturers. That involves, you know, from the treatment at the top end, the treatment at the back end, but also moving water through the process, because all of the pipes and fittings themselves need to be at a very high specification so that chemicals don't leach out from them into the water. So, you know, it's a very technically challenging process to do it, but we're seeing more and more need for that because of, you know, increased need for chips and less water to go around.
I'm glad that at the beginning you talked about how these are really long-term themes that you're thinking about, and this really shouldn't be the investment du jour. These should be these mega trends that we like to think about that should drive the growth of this space in the years ahead. So another mega trend, I think it's safe to say, is the increasing electrification of transportation. Are there any impacts from higher EV sales on water demand?
Yeah, there definitely are. And the link between energy and water has been talked about in general for a long time. Even if you go back to most electricity being formed in coal-fired generation plants, then water is a big part of that. And that continues. Basically, water is used for making everything we see around us. That includes energy, but it also is a really important thing in mining. So in a previous life, I studied engineering originally, and then I was working in consulting, looking at water supply modelling for mines in Queensland. And it's absolutely a mission critical part of mining that you'd need water for processing and all sorts of other things. If we think about decarbonisation of transportation, lithium is a key part of that. And making or refining lithium and extracting it from its natural state is very water intensive. So it takes about 1.5 million litres of water to make about a ton of lithium. And that, so a ton of lithium in round numbers, so say a Model S Tesla, the lithium in that is about 60 kilograms. That's about 16 cars. You know, if you look forward, say into the early 2030s to decarbonize passenger transportation, talking about sort of 50 million cars to do that, that's a lot of water. So that's 3.3 million tons of lithium. It's a lot of water. And the places where these are mined, so lithium basically comes in two different forms. You have sort of hard rock lithium, and that's, say, in places like Western Australia. But a lot of it is in brine form, so, you know, really salty water, and that's in Chile and a very dry part of Chile. So you need a lot of water in a place where there isn't a lot of water in something that's extremely important for addressing climate change. So you see how the challenges are sort of linked. And then, you know, the solutions to that includes, for instance, desalination. So desalination in remote areas like that where there's chronic water shortages for sure are part of the solution.
Let's change tack a bit, talk about something I think we're all reading a lot more about in the news, and that is forever chemicals. Can you tell us a bit whether or not there have been any developments in that area? And of course, what does that mean for water reuse and investments?
Yeah, so forever chemicals, as the name suggests, are a group of human-created chemicals that were basically developed in around the 1940s. And have really great chemical properties that make them very, for instance, water resistant, so great for waterproofing clothing or putting stuff on furniture. It's great for cosmetics. It's great for making sure that fiber-based food packaging doesn't get soggy. It's great for making Teflon, for making semiconductors. They're great molecules used everywhere. So the most commonly used synthetic chemicals that we've created so far. So that's the good news. They're really good. The bad news is that they don't break down in the environment. So they're very resilient. And that means that they end up accumulating in us. And there are really negative health impacts that have been proven over time on that front. So there's a massive challenge in dealing with that. And it's a question of how much to tolerate in things like drinking water as opposed to getting rid of all of it, which is, you know, frankly, something that isn't really feasible because there's so, you know, these things are literally everywhere. Like 99% of Americans have some in their blood. It's very common. So in the US at the moment, there are different state level regulations, but a federal level regulation has been proposed, or a, you know, maximum contaminant level that's working through a process of getting approved. And these things, you know, it takes time to do all that. But this is a multi-decade challenge to solve. And then there's another big question about, okay, what's the best way to deal with this? And this is something that I've been doing a bit of work on recently and meeting with companies about. So one way to deal with that is to provide water treatment solutions, say at a drinking water treatment plant. Okay. So then, you know, you've got utilities who put the water treatment facilities in, and then we pay for it basically through our bills, and you've got the companies who make the particular type of sort of membrane solutions or whatever it is that they use in that facility. So that's one way to do it. There are other ways to do that. So in the US, about 15% of households, or about 15 million households in round numbers, don't get their drinking water from a municipal or from a drinking water treatment plant. Okay, so they're off groundwater and they have their own sort of water treatment systems on site, say at point of entry. So that's a very sort of established market. So 15 million households in the US. This has been going on for many years. If you think about the amount of water that comes into our homes and how much of that we actually end up ingesting, it's really small. So 99% of the water that comes into our homes, we don't actually put inside our bodies. So we use it for, you know, washing machine or a dishwasher or, you know, or showering or whatever it is. So only a small amount actually ends up in us and would need to be treated to stop it, you know, entering our bodies. So that means that there's another alternative solution there, which is where you have water treatment, say, at the point of entry or at point of use, so basically where the water comes out of the tap. There are definitely precedents for that happening. So in South Korea, there was a water contamination scandal related to something else, but in the early 90s, and that basically drove almost universal adoption of point of use water systems. And that's something that continues today. A lot of people around the world voluntarily have point of use systems already, like most office places will have those sort of boxes on a counter that we can get water out of. So, you know, there's an existing market for those things. But then you get into an issue, and this is something where regulation plays a key role. So at the moment, regulation normally says that the water testing happens at the treatment plant. So if that doesn't meet the levels for wherever these get set by the EPA in the US, then they'll need to treat it there. So it could be that we end up with a combination where there is some treatment at the plant and then people in our houses, we say, actually, we've got a lower tolerance for how much of this PFAS or forever chemicals comes into the home or that we drink. So we'll have another system there. So I'm not sure how that will play out. But within the opportunity set of companies, all of those options are covered. So it's a big challenge. There's going to be a lot of different solutions, but we'll see how that plays out. And, you know, when you're looking at these things in terms of, I guess, like valuing a business in that area, it can be difficult to do that. So just to look forward at something, okay, we know this is coming. It's like a, maybe a wave isn't the best analogy, but, you know, it's something that's a long way away and trying to work out how big it's going to be. And that's basically our job, right? It's to understand the scale of that and then to factor that into how that is going to impact these businesses. And it's going to be around for many decades.
Thank you, Justin. If I can maybe highlight some of the things I learned today. You talked about how really fundamentally what's driving the investments that you're making are long-term themes that really should be relevant in the years ahead. You talked about reshoring, talked about electrification of transportation, and then your angle in all of this is how does the use of water, saving water, play into or relate to those long-term themes? For example, semiconductor manufacturing, very water-intensive, how to do that more efficiently, mining for lithium, for electronic vehicles, and so on. And then you highlighted another angle around forever chemicals and the importance for all of us, I think it's safe to say, to treat the water so we're confident that the water we're drinking is pure, but then highlighted that it's not quite as easy as we might think at first blush. Well, Justin, thank you very much for joining me.
Thanks, Daniel. I've really enjoyed it.
That's it for this week's episode of Talking Heads. If you would like more information, please reach out to your BNP Paribas Asset Management contact or check out Viewpoint, our website for investment insights at viewpoint.bnpparibas-am.com. Just before we go, I'd like to mention that the Talking Heads podcast is available on YouTube. Visit youtube.com/bnpam/playlist and tap or click on Talking Heads. You've been listening to the BNP Paribas Asset Management Talking Heads podcast with me, Daniel Morris, and Justin Winter. Please do join me next week. Until then, take care.
This presentation includes a discussion on current market events and is not intended as investment advice or an offer of products or services by BNP Paribas Asset Management. Please keep in mind that the information and analysis in this presentation is only current as of the publication date.